So just by way perhaps of a different take on it. So we've been told in the first part of the reading that it's not about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So when those names are mentioned, there's no conception from a spiritual perspective of individual persons. So what's being described by those names is the quality of a state. And those states are active in us. And it's no different when you start talking about people on other planets. When the text starts dealing with the spirits of Mercury, it's not about spirits from the planet Mercury. What is being offered there is a way of understanding a certain function within the grand man. And that function is present in us all, and it has to do with the ability to remove ideas of person, place, time, and space so that you arrive at real things. So the husk is person, place, time, and space, the level of the material, so that what is real is able to be extracted. And anything described as real, so the phrase real things occurs throughout the heavenly doctrines, it's all over the place. And what are real things? Real things are celestial and spiritual things. So things that have to do with the affections and thoughts, those are real things as opposed to material things, which aren't real in that sense. Material things don't have a bearing on your eternal state, but your thoughts and affections and the quality of them do. Therefore, they are the real things or the things of real importance. So the way the text is written, it's written in a way where you have to consciously apply these principles in order to access the principles that sit beneath the surface. And what's described as the mercurial spirit, if you like, is this function of removing the husk and getting to what's within. But also, what's pointed out there is that there is a tendency to just remain at that sort of knowledge. So it can be through, say, the application of correspondences, and you arrive at spiritual knowledge. But if you don't take the next step and use that knowledge as a basis for self-examination and reflection, then what happens is that you become, well, in here we see there's elements of conceit, pride in one's own intelligence, those sort of elements start to arise. And so what you see with the spirits of Mercury is that they don't have an affection for, which is more of a rational function, which is pulling things together and drawing conclusions for looking to application. That doesn't seem to be part of their disposition. Yet they still serve a function. And, you know, there are lots of descriptions of things in the grand man, like the spirits of the bone or the cartilage or. You know, you have them there, they do serve a function, but the spirits themselves aren't necessarily interested in being of use, but despite that, they are still serving something in the function. Another way, taking it on a more external level, what you see in these spirits are spirits that are troubling Swedenborg. So, by spirits, we mean thoughts. So, you know, the power of Swedenborg's intellect, his whole life would have been one of having to deal with the temptation of just being satisfied in the knowledge. The other side was he was constantly looking to use, and that was the counter. But here you see that you can view this as something that is integrated into Swedenborg's own experience, because it's a universal trait that's being examined here. So Swedenborg is not unfamiliar with temptation to think that he's really intelligent. So he's reflecting on his own experience in relation to these things as well. He's not separated from them. So there's a number which sort of draws that out, and I just thought I'd read. It's quite amusing. His interaction with some spirits from Mercury. So this is taken from Worlds in Space, or Earths in the Universe, number 27. But according to whatever I was looking at, it's also found in AC 6929. But just listen to this. When the spirits of Mercury were with me, while I was writing an explanation of the word in its internal sense, and they could tell what I was writing. They said that what I was writing was extremely gross, almost all the expressions seeming to be material. But I was allowed to reply that people in our world still look upon my writings as so subtle and high-flown that they are unable to grasp much of them. I went on to say that many people in this world are unaware that there is an inner man which acts on the outer man and causes him to be alive. But they convince themselves from delusive sense impressions that the body possesses life. As a result, those who are wicked and lacking in faith cast doubt on life after death. They also call the part of a person which survives death not a spirit but a soul. They dispute what the soul is and where it is located, believing that it must be rejoined to the material body, even though this has been scattered to the four winds for a person to continue living as a person, and much more of the same sort. On hearing this, the spirits of Mercury asked whether such people could become angels. I was allowed to answer that those who had lived good lives of faith and charity did become angels, being no longer concerned with outward and material affairs, but with inward and spiritual ones. When they reach that state, they enjoy light surpassing that of the spirits from Mercury. To enable them to know this is so, an angel from the heaven formed from our world, who has lived this sort of life in the world, was allowed to talk with them. More will be said about this later. So what the idea of Mercury or Jupiter or Venus or whatever it is does is that it puts us in a position where, oh, it's them over there. The next step is actually there's nothing described with regard to those spirits that doesn't take place in our own thoughts and affections. And if we don't see that, that's because we're on another planet, spiritually speaking. We don't see it as being something to do with us. It's the same principle in terms of the historicals. If we get caught up in thinking about Abraham as a historical figure, or Moses, or any of these characters, if we start thinking about them, then we are in Earth. We are on Earth because we are thinking from a very low level in terms of we're thinking materially about things or historically about things. And what this is showing is how there's a process whereby that separation can begin to take place so the mind can be prepared to receive what is higher into it. So it becomes Moses in me. What is this in me? That's the critical question to ask. And then it reorganizes the way we view what we're engaging with. So you've identified the principle. The next step is, where do I do this? Because that's where the gold is. It's in taking the next step, which is why in logopraxis the emphasis is on just finding one thing to work with that will produce material. You know, because every reading is, you know, whatever it is, 10 to 15 pages. There's a lot there. So from a logopraxis point of view, it's about finding something that you can work with. And then if you can find something, then it just becomes about working with that one thing. And then when you come together in the group, that's when all the threads start coming together, right? Because you have an actual practical illustrative ground in yourself from which to view what's presenting. Otherwise, we're just like the spirits of Mercury. We just go through it and we have this information and then we move on to the next reading and we haven't actually integrated any of it. So with everything in the text, it's about bringing the idea that it's process. It's process, it's process, it's process.